Hi, friends, and well, hardly call it evening. It's after midnight here, but I'm trying to finish this section of the Rays and Initiations, section two, which is all done through video commentary. And we've reached that point where we're dealing with the eighth initiation, which reveals everything we might know about planetary purpose, and the ninth initiation, the refusal, which makes it impossible then for the initiate to return, at least at that time, to the cosmic physical plane. So let's see what the Tibetan has to say about the great transition and the refusal. It will, of course, be apparent that the transition referred to is related to the sixth initiation of decision, when the master decides which of the seven paths, or now nine, he will follow to his destined place. Notice it is destined, it is one place to which he is destined. Hopefully, he can see and understand what that is, because it's a completely free decision. So it is at least related to the sixth initiation of decision. It's an even numbered initiation, and maybe we can find that the even numbered initiations are somewhat related to each other, just as the odd numbers are related to each other. Certainly, we have a lot of experience in the minds of disciples relating the second initiation to the fourth, when they invariably think they're passing through the fourth when they're only passing through the second. And there is a great transition as well, onto the cosmic etheric plane at the fourth degree, and at the sixth degree, onto paths which are leading most of them out of the solar system eventually altogether. One thing only, let's see. Here's what he says. I know not what the great refusal involves. So, he's showing that it's possible to think and speculate beyond one's immediately experiential knowledge. One thing only, I know. It indicates the initiate's last contact with what we understand as cosmic evil manifesting on this planet. And in relation to this planet. Now, that's important because there is also the cosmic astral plane, which in a way is the home of cosmic evil. So, the planet is considered an etheric physical representation, an etheric physical precipitation, and the cosmic astral plane, in a way, is not considered to be the planet per se, although it is the astral body of the planetary logos. So when he uses the word solar system, he pretty well stops at the etheric physical planes, cosmically considered. So he is accorded this last contact. But such a contact is not based upon anything analogous to evil within him, but is based upon the planetary appeal for liberation. Thus, he fights with cosmic evil, but not with cosmic evil within himself. It is not there. So, well, we don't know how far this battle with evil really ascends, but we are told that there is a kind of center of cosmic evil, of evil of a very powerful kind, on the cosmic astral plane, much more powerful than the planetary evil, which seems to have its center in our systemic astral body, or in our planetary astral body. So there is this appeal for liberation. This appeal is so strong that the initiate, because his heart is on fire with love, and you know, we might say here, regardless of his ray or rays, is tempted to go back upon his decision and stay with the planet, stay upon the planet with those world saviors who have chosen the path of Earth service. You know, interesting, a temptation based on love. Somewhere we're told that in the future solar system, what is the equivalent of the Black Lodge or the forces of retardation or the forces of obstruction will work with the energy of love and not with the energy of will. These forces are always trying to hold humanity or other beings back from what they might achieve, and they use the forces of retrogression when compared with the forces which must be used for progression. Anyway, there is this appeal for liberation, and he responds to it, and his heart is on fire with love. Do we know any ninth degree initiates? I mean, I think Sanat Kumara is the product of an altogether different initiatory system. But they would be high indeed. And what does he say? That the kinds of Nirmanakayas, or knowers of the purpose, who are positioned between Earth and Venus, consist largely of eighth and ninth degree initiates, just like the Nirmanakayas between Hierarchy and Shambhala consist mostly of sixth and seventh degree initiates. Again, these are words to us, and we're just kind of mapping out some relationships without being able to in any way fully understand. So he may not do this. He may not go back upon his decision. This he may not do. And in the sight of the assembled initiates, he makes his refusal and does his whole duty as he journeys to the sacred feet of the one who stands at the end of his chosen path. And maybe this is the Lord of a constellational chakra within the one about whom not may be said. For instance, in other words, a cosmic logos. Now, eventually, of course, it's going to be the Pleiades which absorbs the initiate, and we can hardly say that there's no possibility of him going further. Indeed, there is, but there is a direction toward different starry systems, informed by various cosmic logoi, and that is what I think lies at the end of his chosen path. But then all paths come together in our local one about whom not may be said, in which the Pleiades as a whole, you know, maybe there's 1,000 stars already, I think some 800 and something have been identified, these stars representing the head center of the one about whom not may be said. So, again, we come up against the outstanding planetary characteristic, which has been presented to us under many different words, the sensitivity which in some form or another distinguishes each initiation. As we rise in our initiatory status, we rise in sensitivity. As we rise in initiatory... initiatory status, we become ever more sensitive. We know it also as attraction. It's a second ray thing. The sensitivity which moves outward until it attracts and draws to itself those forms of being which the initiate can. Now, forms of being, very interesting. We are all forms of being, you know. Let's just say that every entity, maybe I'll make big and small, from the greatest universal entity to the very smallest, is a form of being, or really of being. So, you know, the ultimate being. Sensitive, okay. So we know it also has attraction. At this moment, you know, we're dealing very much with the second ray soul of our planetary logos. We know it also has attraction, the sensitivity which moves outward until it attracts and draws to itself those forms of being which the initiate can instruct or aid. You kind of wonder if this isn't what a master does in his own way. Does a master do this and has the sensitivity of a master DK touched us and drawn us in so that he may instruct us? It would seem so. So there are always analogies. We know it also as the overall activity conferring that spiritual sensory perception which makes the initiate aware in a universal sense of all the concerns, the sphere of influence of the will of God. Now, in this case, we are probably dealing with that, let's call it a universe, a universe which is our solar system. You know, that word is used in different ways, and lately in astrophysics and our modern astronomy, we use the universe to indicate the grand totality, but perhaps it was not always so, and the universe could have indicated at, well, like a galaxy, an island universe, you know, and even a solar system, a kind of much smaller universe. Okay. So the master draws in others for instruction and aid, and the great beings draw in those that these beings can instruct and aid. We know it also as the overall activity conferring that spiritual sensory perception of however high a nature, which makes the initiate aware in a universal sense of all that concerns the sphere of influence of the will of God. Now, we can call our globe lord a kind of God, or our chain lord a kind of God. They're all emanations. We can call our scheme lord, our planetary logos, a kind of God, and certainly we can call our solar logos God. And when we say our God is a consuming fire of love, we might as well mean our solar logos, because it fits with his rays. So anyway, this sensitivity is operative. This demonstrates particularly at the eighth initiation of transition. So sensitivity, okay, drawing in for instruction, drawing in for benefit, demonstrates at the eighth initiation. In the ninth initiation of refusal, this heightened spiritual perception, there's a heightening of spiritual perception with each initiation as we proceed, is presented to us under the word existence. For existence is a livingness coupled with awareness which finds its own place and the spiritual house of its being, which is the true home of all beings. But of this our planetary forms know not. Well, this is one of those great definitions, existence. And can we fathom it? Can we fathom it? That's the question. Okay. Verdana, Verdana. And maybe I want to make this a bit bigger because it's so pronounced, you know. It's so livingness. A livingness. Well, a livingness within universe. Maybe existences don't exist in the post-pralaic worlds, what I've called the supra-numinal worlds, when there is no universe, but the X is what throws being out of its, well, out of non-being. It throws existence out into universe. It provides for a livingness of beingness. In the supra-numinal worlds, in the post-pralaic worlds, there is a kind of beingness. There's an absolute deity with an infinite content, and there is an absoluteness, which is the ultimate state, which is a non-articulated state containing everything. So existence is a livingness coupled with awareness, which finds its own place. Because we can't even talk about place if we're only talking about being, but forms of being can have place, and I'm going to write that in, you see. Forms of being can have place, finds its own place, and the spiritual house of its being, because being has no house, you know. Being has no house, but when being, I wonder if I can put it this, when being exists, then there is a house, or a ring pass knot, a limitation. So it's very interesting that, what should we say, that existence derives from being. So, and the spiritual house of its being, which is the true home of all beings. But of this our planetary forms know not. You know, we are too limited in our perception on the cosmic physical plane. Existence is a livingness. Okay, well, it's an isness, a livingness, a beingness, coupled with awareness which finds its own place and the spiritual house of its being. It finds its limitation. And out in the universe, out, X, out, it is the true home of all projected beings as existences, but their really true home is the beingness which is extra universal. That word X, or that, you know, syllable X, has to be watched carefully, because it means a going out from, a condensation, a precipitation. Existence is a precipitation of being, and existences are often called beings, but they come from being. But of this our planetary forms know not. Who does? How high do we have to climb before we can see and understand the being or beingness from which existence arises? Okay, well, this the initiate has at last learnt to find after the struggle with evil. in himself, yeah, and this for, you might say, for quite a while, because evil is very subtle. Oh, how about that? And is non-assimilative, if I can call it that way. After the struggle with evil in himself, after the struggle with materialism and with evil in the human family, where he serves hierarchically to counteract that evil, that division, that holding oneself back from participation in the divine plan and purpose, he struggles with all of this and serves to thwart it. And after his struggle to aid in the closing of the door where evil dwells, and maybe, you know, that door is on the cosmic astral plane. Higher than that, well, evil ascends along the line of Mahat, which is a kind of a pure mind without love, so maybe it does go even higher on the cosmic planes, but I suspect it does not leave the dense the dense astral body, the non-etheric portion of the cosmic astral body. And his refusal to make any contact, even with good intention, with cosmic evil, at least as it is demonstrated on the cosmic physical plane. Because it's, as stated, it may be have a kind of a home, unimaginable home on the cosmic astral plane on which he is traveling and progressing on some of the paths, you know, the path of magnetic work and the path to Sirius, and those are cosmic astral paths, and none other, I think. Well, you know, one just wants to pore over this. What an amazing definition of existence. And a livingness is, in a way, what is livingness? Let's call it the transposition of being into a universal state. So it is, livingness is, and I'm going to call it a strange way, being in universe, being in universe. It's not the whole being, which is all capitalized and represents the state, if I can call it that, of the absolute and of the absolute deity. It's not that. Existence. When there is no universe, there is no existence. Okay, and I think I need to put that down. When there is no universe, and cyclically, there is not, then there is, then there is no existence. Okay. Well, obviously, this goes so deep. We are all existences, every one of us, and beings, in a way, derivative from being, from universal being, which itself is derivative from absolute being, which I symbolize with all letters capitalized. So this lies ahead of the individual. The struggle with materialism is a struggle with apparent entification, or limitation, entification. Probably there's no word of that nature, at least here in the spell checker. With apparent entification, because all entification is apparent except for the universal logos, and even the universal logos is an apparent entity, which is really derivative of the ray of the absolute, or the ray of absolute deity, or the ray of absolute infinitude. So, we begin to touch on philosophy as we get to these higher initiations. The Planetary Lodge of Masters, has absorbed him. And at the final initiation, the Great Lodge on Sirius has recognized him as a Sirian master, because the entered apprentice phase begins at the fifth degree. The two initiations of the threshold in terms of Sirius are the fifth and sixth, corresponding to entry and purification. Then the seventh degree is transfiguration, and the eighth degree is a kind of crucifixion, corresponding to the lower fourth degree, and the ninth degree then corresponds to mastership on Sirius. So the Great Lodge on Sirius has recognized him, not just as a Sirian entered apprentice, but as a kind of master, whatever that means in terms of that Great Lodge. And with the Black Lodge of Adepts, he will have nothing to do, let's say he works beyond cosmic physical form. Although, you kind of wonder again that when that Black Lodge is found on the cosmic astral plane, what does it do there? Or does it simply project itself into the world of denser cosmic form on the cosmic physical plane? Now, these would be questions that a master or a high Chohan would be putting to himself. They are not really questions for us to answer at this time. He will mitigate its evil effects and will struggle to offset its results. But he knows that the final overcoming of cosmic physical evil must be undertaken by existences much further advanced than even the members of the Council at Shambhala, certain solar entities, and certain great lives from Sirius are dealing with the problem. Goodness, evil, especially cosmic evil, is a profound, a matter of profound difficulty. And we rid ourselves of one form of evil only to discover that there are others more subtle. But we do know that no evil can appear in the sunshine of the major sun, Sirius. And so under Sirius and under our solar logos comes this dealing with cosmic evil. And what can be done with respect to the cosmic astral plane, which is kind of an advanced parallel of the Marakara of the systemic astral plane? Well, something will have to be done, but we don't know, and here it is not discussed. So at this ninth degree, he is recognized, and he will not deal with these beings, these retarded, self-retarding beings, and he will mitigate the evil effects of the Cosmic Black Lodge, and will struggle to offset its results for the sake of the cosmic physical plane, I suppose. But he knows that the final overcoming of cosmic physical evil must be undertaken by existences far greater even than the planetary logoi, certain solar entities, and certain great lives from Sirius are dealing with the problem. Well, it's all apparently in hand, you know. There's so much of evil that we do not appreciate, but always it's based upon some kind of blindness and some kind of lack of appreciation of the goodness that lies ahead with those who choose the path of relinquishment of limitation. You know, there are so many of us that don't want to relinquish, but we have to realize that what we are relinquishing is a limited state for a far greater state, and some simply hold on and won't do it. The theme of the living consciousness of the planetary logos is forever and unchangeably the great hierarchy of being, that chain of life in which the smallest link is of importance and the greatest link is related to the smallest through the electrical interplay of spiritual energy. So the theme of our planetary logos is inseparable from the consideration. Theme of our planetary logos is inseparable from a consideration of the great hierarchy of being. And all is linked together. There is no such thing as real separation, real division. Remember that division is a willed act of perceptual self-circumscription. I decide to willfully see less of myself, and I hold that lessness, and thus an apparently separated entity is created through emanation. That self-seeing is the act which propels emanation, and with every tightening of the ring passanat of perception, different types of entities are born. There is not, from one important angle of life, but hierarchy, at least that's from the relational angle. In the absolute, there is no hierarchy. Linking sun with sun, star with star, solar system with solar system, planet with planet, and all planetary lives to each other. And there is a spiritual status involved in this hierarchical relationship. The major keynote of every single planetary initiation, even to the highest, is relationship. I seem to be anticipating certain words that crop up here. I didn't see that, but maybe something in me did. The major keynote of every single planetary initiation, even to the very highest, is relationship, always of a different and more thorough and more intimate kind, let's just say, always of a more intimate kind. What other qualities may be revealed to the initiates on other paths, we know not, because, you know, think of it, you know, in this vast cosmos, or even in our local cosmic logos or local supercosmic logos, one about whom not may be said, there are all these potential qualities that we have never heard of and have never really appeared for assessment or for recognition on our planet and our little globe. So quality is based upon division, and especially on the hierarchicalization of divisions. So let me put that down. So quality is based on the hierarchicalization of divisions and emanated, let's see, distinct emanations. So there are all kinds of things which the absolute, which the universal logos is perceiving, and they are all ranged in terms of their nearness to his state of consciousness. Hierarchicalization. All right, that's going to be one of our words. What other qualities may be revealed to the initiate on other paths, we know not. But the goal of all endeavor upon our planet is right relations between man and man, between man and God, between all expressions of divine life, from the tiniest atom on into infinity. And, well, when dealing with infinity, it's the subject unto itself. But this is important. The goal of all endeavor upon our planet. Okay. Is right relations. And I'm going to make that very big. And, you know, we're told that the theme of Shambhala is right relations. Sometimes we're told it's right human relations, but right relations might be sufficient. And right relations, what are they? Let's say that right relations are relations as they appear in archetypes. Archetypes. Purpose is a collection of relations which set a pattern to be achieved for all relations below in what I call the mosaic world of parts and pieces. Okay, from the standpoint of our planetary evolution, there is naught but love, naught but goodwill and the will to good. And let's just say, especially now, when our planetary logos is functioning through a second ray soul. Okay, from the standpoint of our planetary evolution, there is naught but love, naught but goodwill and the will to good. And, you know, if I was going to look at the will to good, I would call it, what would I call it? Okay, W, okay, W, the will to archetypalization, the will to the purpose, which is the archetype. See, we live here in a very disarranged world, we might say, and things are all out of relation to each other, and they should be in a different relation than they are now. But until we get all of that in the lower world arranged the way the great forms of Plato, the way the great archetypes, the great living relationships are arranged, then we still have a task, and evolution is not completed. You know, it's to adjust the mosaic world of very definitely perceived parts and pieces and articulations to the sort of seamless relationships of the archetype which determines purpose, or the archetypes which determine purpose. So there is naught but love, naught but goodwill and the will to good. This exists already, and its true manifestation is nearer today than at any time in planetary history. So that which sees the end from the beginning exists today. Now notice the word exist. It's out there in the objective world of our universe. So this guiding archetype we call purpose is present. The guiding archetype we call purpose is present. All right. From stage to stage. We're getting there. From stage to stage, from crisis to crisis, from point to point, and from center to center, the life of God progresses. Which God? Maybe the planetary logos, the solar logos, you know, the ultimate God of a universe, I call the universal logos. It's probably true of all of them, but we are interested in the evolution of our planetary logos, in whose being we live and move, you know, and we have our part to play. So the life of God progresses, leaving greater beauty behind it as it moves through one form after another and from kingdom to kingdom. So we say, this is about life moving through form. One attainment leads to another. Out of the lower kingdoms, man has emerged. And as a result of human struggle, it's always the fourth ray working towards archetypal beauty, let's just say, the fourth ray working towards archetypal beauty, the kingdom of God will also appear. It has appeared. The kingdom of God, what do we mean? Do we mean the fifth kingdom of soul, or do we mean something still greater, the kingdom of planetary lives, the kingdom of solar lives, and so forth? Maybe for every seven, there's a nine, and just as in the Pleiades, and maybe there are really nine kingdoms and not just seven. The bringing in of that kingdom is all that truly concerns humanity today. So from a certain point of view, this is the fifth kingdom. And all living processes in mankind are bent towards preparing each individual human being to pass into that kingdom. And that, you know, what is that? That's the, Well, I guess we can call it the kingdom of souls. And technically, you know, as our seventh petal begins to open in the egoic lotus, we are, and the fifth petal is fully open, we are entering the kingdom of souls. The fifth kingdom in the hall of wisdom. The knowledge that there may be greater manifestations than even the kingdom of God may be inspiring, but that is all. Well, he's given us greater kingdoms, the kingdom of solar lives, the kingdom of planetary spirits, so to speak, planetary lives. The manifestation of the kingdom of God on earth, the preparing of the way for its great inaugurator, the Christ, the making possible of the externalization of the hierarchy upon earth, give each of us and all a fully adequate task and something for which to live and work, to dream and aspire. So DK is concentrating our perception in a practical way. He wants us to accomplish something and not simply idly dream of greater and greater, higher and higher, deeper and deeper, which I myself tend to do, but it can be, of course, an escape, and one has to be very careful about that. Right now, the kingdom of souls is coming in. The heart is opening. The new group of world servers, as the Ajna Center of Sanat Kumara, is making transition to the heart, which is the ashram of Sanat Kumara, the hierarchy, and eventually to the head center. So new spheres of experience are opening up to us, and it is possible, at least in a practical way, that humanity can begin to know something about this kingdom of souls, this kingdom of God, we might say, because certainly God seems much closer when one is identified as a soul. The great unitive loving force, God is love, on our planet seems much closer. The five volumes composing a treatise on the seven rays are now completed, my brothers. Whoa, what a labor, you know. As D.K. said for him, all of this was a labor of love. But for Alice Bailey, a labor. It has been for me, oh, goodness, I'm just remembering, and there it is. It has been for me a labor of love, and for AAB, a labor. I guess I remember from earlier reading. It will suffice for study for many years to come. And not just one generation, but perhaps one spiritual generation, however long that lasts. I mean, I can see things in these books which cannot be comprehended in one generation, two or three. They will just go on for hundreds of years, and they are, in a way, written for advanced initiates. I sign myself, because it has been given out who I am, as the Master Tualku. We know that Alice Bailey mistakenly left the name Tualku instead of simply the Tibetan at the end of one of the articles. Well, everybody, you know, had their own kind of reaction to that, and DK told them that according to the way they reacted to that revelation, they would be indicating to him their fitness for a real discipleship or not. So, you know, those who became overly excited, and so it has to be taken with equanimity. Things do happen, and one has to respond to them in a way which serves the plan. Maybe it had been his intention to remain the Tibetan for the whole time, and those who could put it all together and realize he was Tualku could do that. But interestingly, you know, there came a time when even as friends, Madame Rurik and Alice Bailey had kind of a parting of the ways, especially from Madame Rurik's side, and she was quite suspicious and had a lot of Scorpio there, and she said something like, well, we know what hides behind the name the Tibetan, and she was imagining some sort of practitioner of black magic or Tibetan black magic. But she, of course, and, you know, was such a great woman, but she fell into error there. And I wonder if in the course of her life, and maybe between lives, I don't think in the course of her life that was ever straightened out. When I went to the Agni Yoga Society, I was interested in what had been written down about Master Moria. I was inclusive, I think. And the lady who was in charge there, a very venerable, very old lady, basically said, oh, Mr. Robbins, you have made your choice. You know, as if I had chosen the Tibetan and couldn't possibly benefit from Master Moria. But I think that is, that was a limited point of view. Let's put it like that. So we have a bit more, maybe another 30 pages, roughly, in this book, and our next work will be the five great spiritual events. But in a way, the work on the seven rays in these five volumes, two volumes of esoteric psychology, one volume of esoteric astrology, one volume of esoteric healing, and this book that we have worked on now for a long time, The Rays and the Initiations, these are the five. They are all written on the great second ray, just the way Cosmic Fire is written on the first ray and the third ray. And DK has in his own nature the representation of all of those rays. And as we read along, we can see what kind of quality is there when he says he's writing on a certain ray. We certainly know how very technical a treatise on cosmic fire is. And of course, there's a lot of the seventh ray in there as well. Well, remember that he said at one point, a ray to a human being becomes a limitation. But then again, it all starts up again, and a ray becomes a quality of a planetary logos or a solar logos and so forth, all of whom have their ray charts. Well, I saw that I had begun all of this in 2014, probably 4 years ago, and there was a whole year in which I did nothing on it, and 1 year in which I apparently just did one recording. I had no idea. A lot were done in 2014, and a lot now in 2017. And I trust for those who really want to study these matters, and thus, I would say, stimulate their abstract mind and cultivate their intuition, that these video commentaries will help. So this is then the end of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 103, and I had made a mistake earlier. You know, I had said that we had begun at 7:29, but really it was, 7:27, but really it was 7:29. So this goes up to 7:41, and if I go backwards, I'll see where it actually begins. Okay, 7:36 to 7:41, about five pages. 7:41, and this should be 7:29 as it is, and not 7:27. I had made a mistake. Okay, so 7:36 to 7:41, and same here as we reach the end. 7:36 to 7:41. And then we'll begin. And what day is this? It's the 18th of December 2017. And beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 104. And it will be 7:41. I don't know when I'll get to this. I hope soon. I would like to so to speak, finish my, what can I call it, my first pass at this material by the time the new year comes. But the new, everything becomes so busy, you know, and with many mundane obligations that I'm not sure that I'll be able to bring this to whatever kind of completion I had hoped by the beginning of next year. And when we get into the depth of the old commentary, well, you know, it goes deeper and deeper, so one just has to propose the interpretation one has at the moment. And we have worked with old commentary sections in these video commentaries, and, you know, hopefully, as difficult as some of them may be, I've been able to give some hints, which at least are relatively clear to me, to the readers of the book, especially in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. And there's a lot of work still to be done in the Dyna book. My colleague, Elena Dramcini, is doing some very exacting astrological work on the people, and nothing can really replace that. I just work with maybe greater generalities in a psychological sense, and I leave the rigorous astrology to her. I have done some fairly rigorous astrology, but she can handle that quite beautifully, and I can emphasize other things. So this is, well, it's almost an hour program, about 55 minutes. And I hope that you derive some benefit. Obviously, here, the life of Alice Bailey is drawing to a close for some of these final writings. I think she died in December of 1949, and here we have February of 1949. So these writings are in the nature of a summary, and we'll take them up as soon as we possibly can. So lots of love and many blessings to everybody. We have a great teaching before us, and hopefully in the Moria Federation, where our curriculum attempts to approximate the curriculum for the preparatory schools as much as may be possible, we will have contributed to the deepening of the ageless wisdom in the consciousness of people such as ourselves, you know. All right. See you soon, and bye-bye.